Tereo Ererangi o Te Mānia. This episode was produced in Otatahi by Plains Media, with support from New Zealand On Air.
It's time now for Green Thumbs in Canterbury, out and about with the Canterbury Horticultural Society.
Kia ora, Ray.
And same to you, Amy. How are things with you?
Very good. Very, very good. I feel like the year is racing by.
Don't talk to me about it. We're halfway through February, end of February. It's dreadful. Anyway, we've got a guest in the studio with us today.
We do.
We have our old friend, Alan Jolliffe. Now, I'm not saying that he's an old person, but just he's an old friend. And Alan is the president of the New Zealand Institute of Horticulture, and he's going to tell us all about the things that the Horticulture Institute does. Because you're not the Horticulture Society, you're the Horticultural Institute, aren't you?
That's correct, yeah. So, I'm the president of the Royal New Zealand Institute of Horticulture. And interestingly, it was started in 1923 by a number of organisations, including the equivalent of the Nurseman's Association, the Orchardists, the Veggie Growers, the beekeepers and a few others, and a bit of forestry and a wee bit of agriculture tucked in there as well, to bring together all of those industries under sort of one heading for mainly educational purposes or to have combined events. That's what started. So in 1923 it started, and so we're 103 years old.
It's amazing, isn't it? And it's still going strong.
It's had to change over the years. So in the 1930s, we got a royal charter from the King. So that actually helped kickstart a lot of that work during the 1900s. Gosh, 1900s. Sounds old, doesn't it?
Last century. Well, there was the Depression through that time and all sorts of things, and people were probably a bit desperate for
information. Oh, yes, and they were, even through the Depression and through the wars, they were involved in helping people to cultivate large areas of land for food production, not only for New Zealanders, but for export as well to the soldiers overseas.
Yeah.
So lots of different things happened. In particular, they became an educational organisation, not teaching so much, but more as an examining body.
Yes. So you go and learn somewhere else, and then
you could learn from other institutions or self learning. Early, of course, in its early stage, no one was teaching horticulture.
No.
But there were good horticulturists around, and some of those early horticulturists were given a qualification called a National Diploma in Horticulture simply because of their known expertise at that particular time.
Yeah.
But over time, the examination system took over, and certainly in my time, so that was the 1970s. There were quite a number of different qualifications that were offered, and some of them were responding to market conditions, but also to the needs of the professional horticulturist. Yep. And that was kind of the pinnacle examination and diploma. So when I went through, you had a junior certificate, an intermediate certificate, and a national diploma. And so it would be 5 years to get the national diploma.
And how did you go to a university or how did you actually get those stages?
Well, interesting, in those days, the Technical Correspondence Institute out of Wellington was the main teaching organisation. Because as you can imagine, horticulturists are spread right through the country. Mm. And there's not really concentrations like builders or plumbers or whatever else in one place. So they were the main teaching organisation, and the Institute became the examining body for those exams. Apprentices went through the same process with the Technical Correspondence Institute, so they could cross-credit some stuff into what they were doing as well. So that went through that whole period through to 1989-ish, in the 1990s, there was an organisation, a government review of apprenticeship training and training and all of those sorts of things. It was called the Hawke Report.
Mm-hmm.
And the Hawke Report said, oh, we should set up ITOs, industry training organisations. Yeah. And the government accepted that. And a couple of years later, the government wrote to us and said, sorry, you're no longer an examining authority. We just cut you out of the system. But we'll give you a couple of years to wind down because you've got existing students. So
and expertise and it's experience and all the rest.
Yes, well, that's the interesting part. There's and so by I'm just trying to think the exact dates, but probably the mid 1990s that was all gone.
Yeah,
and the ITO started to take over the. They took over the teaching and they took over examining by unit standards.
Yes.
On the job unit standards. The biggest issue with that, from my perspective, is that it stopped at level 3, maybe level 4, which is about the intermediate certificate.
Mm. Yes.
So from that stage on, no one was getting a equivalent diploma right across the system. And that still exists today. Although the diploma exists in writing, no one is teaching it.
No.
And
there's no path, really, to it.
There is a path to it, but no one is teaching at level 5 or even level 6.
Yeah.
And you go back and talk to some of the early people, like Dr. Keith Hammett, the breeder.
Yep.
He said when he came to New Zealand, he thought that the National Diploma in Horticulture was the equivalent of about a master's degree.
Yeah.
So, I mean, I think that's not quite... It wasn't probably quite that, but it was certainly accepted the National Diploma in Horticulture, the equivalent of a Bachelor of Science degree for pay for people working for the Ministry of Agriculture.
Mm-hmm.
So it was equivalent to a university degree.
Yeah, but so no longer.
No longer. Mm-hmm. And I've come back in 1970. Hang on,
was that 2017
I came back in and back onto the executive and we started looking at where we were and what we were doing because we were sort of slowing down because these things were basically taken from us. Also, the digital age had arrived.
Yes.
So we constructed a digital strategy which basically sits around way back in those days, we talked Facebook. So we have a massive Facebook page with about 1,800 people following on that and quite a lot of really interesting information going onto the Facebook page. So that's 1,700 people starting to get more information.
Mm-hmm.
We have, because we have our website, and from a digital point of view, everything we do now is digital.
Yes.
So we have a digital website, and on that, is every publication we've ever produced way back to 1923.
I have been digging recently.
Have you?
There's a lot of really good information on the website.
So anyone can access
it. It's free.
Yeah.
Okay.
It's free for anybody in the world, basically, to access that. And interestingly, there are more inquiries perhaps from overseas than there is from New Zealand at the moment.
Yeah.
We hope to move that around a bit and get more people, because it is a history of horticulture in New Zealand for 103 years.
Yes,
in that, and that also includes a history of the institute, which was produced in about the 1950s, but it covered all those early years, and quite intricate, and quoting the minutes and all sorts of things. But interesting, I mean, people like Dr. Leonard Kakane was the president for a while. So, eminent ecologist, botanist in New Zealand. So that's been our biggest project, if you like, over the last few years. And it is now complete. We've got a few other things digitally from an admin point of view to do, but everything's out there. For people to see and experience. So that, and we got a grant from the a historical grant to actually get all that done. But it's still time consuming.
Oh, absolutely. Oh, someone's got to do the work.
Yeah, and we've
it happens digitally, but the The other digits have to do it, don't they?
Yeah. And we have our we publish a journal every 6 months, basically. But we don't put that on for about a year to 2 years.
Yep, yep.
So if you want the latest journal, you have to join. So that's it. That's our
Your key.
That's our gate.
Yeah.
Yep, yeah.
No, fair enough. There's got to be some additional perks for members.
Yeah. And that's fine. It's it's a professional, not scientific, but a what I would call a professional publication.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
Where, you know, science is quoted, but also the practical side's brought into it as well.
Yeah.
And academics produce lots of papers.
They do.
But it's picking up the really practical stuff.
So you've got, it's a bit like, and a good example I was thinking about coming in here is soil.
Yes.
Now, Ray will remember a presentation by the lady from Lincoln on soil fungi.
Oh.
Well, that really is just the start.
Yes.
Just early stuff, the start of this whole thing about soil. You know, soil is not dirt.
No.
And soil's a living, breathing
ecosystem,
thing,
isn't it?
And,
yes.
So I just sent an article in the New Zealand Gardener from last year, read that by a soil scientist, and I had to send it to a person in Kapiti Coast because we were talking about soil on the emails, and I sent it to her, and she said, Ellen, I'm going to have to read this 5 times to get my head around it because it's not what we were taught when we were kids, basically.
Yeah, that's right.
And, and I said, well, that's the simple version. It's not the complex version about it. And those are the sorts of things that you know, we have to do some work about. The other interesting one that I have to write about, and I haven't just had time, is the botanists. There was about 8 botanists produced a paper about eco-sourcing.
Eco-sourcing.
Yeah, of native seeds.
Oh, yes. Yeah.
And you see these people say, yeah, got to have eco-sourcing stuff. Well, they did quite a big exercise, and it came out that eco-sourcing really, instead of minute areas, can be very large areas which you can eco-source for. So like all of Canterbury. Not South Canterbury and not North Canterbury, but all of Canterbury is important. And I think they came up with 8 or 9 regions in New Zealand.
Right.
And you can draw a line on a map.
Yeah.
And then they went through and said, but 50 kilometres the other side of that line's easy.
Well,
it's okay as well.
Well, of course. I mean, the bees fly that, can fly, and butterflies and wind and everything, doesn't it?
Well, I keep saying, how far does the kiraru fly?
Yeah.
And they can do 60 k's a day.
Yeah.
So, I mean, I don't know if that's for there and back, whatever. Yeah.
But whatever.
You
can't
line,
be precise, can you?
Can't be precise about it. So those are the kind of things that we need to get out to people in terms of being able to do that. So we've done the digital side. One of the things that's very close to my heart now is continuing professional development.
Yes.
And so, and that will enable people to actually lift their skills from the intermediate stage to the diploma stage in some sort of way. Well, we haven't got all the way through to what the end product's going to look like, but we are starting to look at that and to say in horticulture, and then it doesn't matter which bit of horticulture you're in, professional development will be an important part of that.
Look, we're going to need more food grown. We're going to need more cover for our pastures and things. I mean, it's just so important that we really get going, isn't it?
Yep. And I think the other interesting thing is if I die and Niall Drain dies, that's the last 2 NDHs in Christchurch, basically.
Yeah.
So that's, I mean,
yeah.
Oh, yeah. So it just shows
it,
you,
it shows you
how close it's
getting to. So where's the next generation?
Well, that's
coming
the same for a lot of things, isn't it?
Bring through into hold management positions.
Mm. Yeah.
Mm. And they're really important positions that we actually need in the horticultural sector. Because horticulture can cover, as I said, we started through orcharding right through to to flower gardening,
well,
basically.
I mean, I've looked on your website, and you've got a professional development section where you've obviously looked
at
your website and where you've looked at specific topics, and they range, you know, from botany through to strengthening communities through environmental design, through to, you know, there's the topic is huge.
Yeah, and I mean, that's really, that's not... I've did that as an example to what is what could be done.
Yeah.
And we wouldn't have to do it ourselves, if you know what I mean.
Yeah.
Because most of that stuff is written or produced as a YouTube video or whatever else by other people.
Yeah.
All we're doing is curating it, to coin a common modern phrase.
Yeah, that's right.
For what we look at them and say, that's pretty good.
Yeah, well, I was going to say, you do vet them to make sure you don't get...
Yeah, don't put rubbish up.
Have any cranks up there or anything.
So that's where our... That's kind of where we're heading to, to build that back up. And, you know, more people coming to the website. Mm-hmm. We are doing a presentation out of Dunedin from Dylan Norfield's garden. It's just been made a five-star garden. He's got 1,500 different species of plants in his garden.
Wow.
And Dylan's been in New Zealand a number of years now. He's won gold medals at Chelsea at RHS shows. I think he's got 30 gold medals somewhere.
Wow.
Working for his father's nursery.
Yeah.
And they came to New Zealand. The family's up stakes and came to New Zealand. But so he's really knowledgeable about trees and plants and botanic, and he's the botanical curator at Dunedin Botanic Gardens.
Yes, of course. I know the name.
Yeah. So he's coming through. We'll record that presentation, which he's doing out of Dunedin, and that will go onto our website as well. Mm-hmm. And so, I did one on mistletoes. We've done one on poisonous plants.
We're just talking about that coming along. Alan's favourite plant almost is New Zealand mistletoe.
Well it's really interesting. But then within the last two or three years, the number of mistletoe little articles and photographs and stuff that appeared on websites and stuff, I thought, I might have started something here.
You trendsetter.
They're the kind of things. And so, and it's good because the mistletoe is beautiful flowering at Christmas time.
It's gorgeous.
Unlike the English mistletoe, which flowers in the middle of summer, so it's only green leaves.
In winter over in Europe, it's not very spectacular, is it?
No, it's not very spectacular. And it's more spectacular than fruit, little white berries on it.
At least our one's red and it.
Yeah. Well, we've got two red ones, a yellow one, two green ones, and three tiny little ones that no one would even notice.
Yeah, you'd have to know.
But interesting, Australia's got 30 different species of mistletoe.
Wow. I mean, they're absolutely epiphytic, but they're not parasitic, aren't they?
No, they call them hemiparasitic, which means they've got green leaves, produce their own chlorophyll. They're just getting moisture from the host plant and using it to grow on. So that's where we're up to, and
this must be an amazing resource.
Yeah, and it's going to get bigger as we start generating this material and. And it's been interesting generating it ourselves. And, I'm 76 this year. I'm not a digital native. We need some young people to do some of the stuff as well, And they can do it without even looking at it. Yeah. I have to read the instructions.
But your photography is beautiful.
Oh, yeah, we get a few photographs on my Facebook page.
You have some fabulous ones.
I haven't put up much lately. Haven't been doing much travelling.
Well, hopefully you get some more in this year.
Yeah, well, pre-Christmas is probably the best time for photographs of the stuff. And this time of year is getting a bit...
they're getting past it a bit now.
Berries and stuff. Lots of different things like that. So... So the Institute, while it looks after professionals, one of those early qualifications we had was a certificate in horticultural theory. which was for Joe Bloggs at Home, basically. You could line up and study that. Now, that that doesn't exist now.
No.
But I suspect that I know the Open Polytechnic, which was the Technical Correspondence Institute, does have...
they've got the National Certificate in Horticulture, which is a level 3.
It's level 3.
Because I'm just about to do that.
Yeah, so that's sitting there. They have a certificate in organics as well.
Yeah.
And so they're kind of open to everybody.
Yes.
And that's where that's sort of taken over from that. But again, it's really trying to convert people from the amateur to the... semi-professional
stuff that
we need to work on. So have a bit of fun.
So would you say that then membership of the Institute is, it's pretty much for everybody if you've got a passion for some of that horticulture theory in particular, or is it, could you say it's for everybody, even if you're more of a backyard gardener, there's something for everyone?
Yeah, we've got everybody from backyard gardens or front yard gardens, right through to professional horticulturists. Some of the people you know, Keith Hammett, Jack Hobbs.
There's definitely some recognisable names.
Wolfgang Bott from the Botanic Gardens, Dylan. And there are a number of other ones like that. And then there's a number of other people who have a real interest in horticulture. One of the other groups of members we have is the New Zealand Gardens Trust members.
Yes.
So if you own a garden which is open to the public and registered with the New Zealand Gardens Trust, part of the fee you pay them comes to us, and you get membership of the Institute of Horticulture as well. So that's quite nice. Really, really important work we actually do. Actually, it's quite time consuming.
Oh, well, Ellen, I do think that we're getting the message that we are over time.
Yeah.
But we could have
gone on forever.
Could have kept chatting for a very long time. So thank you for coming and telling us a bit about the Institute. There's a lot more information, like you said, online. Their website is fantastic.
And what is the website, Ellen?
It's rnzih.org.nz.
Okay.
But it will be in the information about the episode as well. So don't stress if you didn't get that down. and it'll go out in the CHS newsletter as well. So we'll make sure to publish it there. Cool. But thank you so much, Ellen.
It's great.
So thank you again to Ellen for joining us.
He has got so much knowledge.
He is a fountain of knowledge.
Absolutely.
And, I mean, we talked about the fact that there's a lot of information on the RNZIH website. There's also a lot on Alan's personal website as well.
Yes, so I'm not sure he doesn't mind you looking at.
No, it was linked off the RNZIH website as well. So, what's coming up in March?
Oh, there seems to be so much coming up. Yes. There's Garden Life.
Yes, in March. If you're listening to this on the 2nd of March, it is tomorrow, Tuesday the 3rd, and the following day, Wednesday the 4th.
Don't even talk to me about it, I know.
Evita Woods and Isabel Weston are talking about all about flowers.
Yes.
And then we've also got Stacey Weaver talking about botanical photography, which will be fabulous.
Lots of us love to do botanical photography, but to get the best picture, you need to talk to an expert.
You need to know how to do it. And then we've got more still in the Tea in My Garden series. Yes. Flaxmere is coming up on Friday the 13th of March.
And Ohinatahi on the 10th of April.
Yes, I must remember to put that in my calendar.
Yes.
Priest Flower Workshops, Sunday the 15th of March with our expert Deb's Eagle. And then we've got an Ikebana Workshop coming up, 26th of March.
Yes.
And that's
an evening one, 6:30 to 8:30,
And there's lots more online.
Oh, absolutely.
But I do want to take a moment to say we have the Margaret Watling event coming up this year. So it's a biennial, biennial event.
It is.
Run by the Canterbury Horticulture Society, and it focuses on floral arranging, basically. So it's honouring Margaret Watling's legacy. This particular year is going to be demonstrations including chrysanthemums because...
It's part of the... Is it the National Chrysanthemum Show this year?
It is the National Chrysanthemum Show, which is being held with the CHS Chrysanthemum Group.
Yes.
Saturday and Sunday, 2nd and 3rd of May, in the ILEX Event Centre in the Botanic Gardens. So it is going to be quite the event. So the show itself is during the day, 2nd and 3rd, and the Margaret Watling lecture is in the evening on the 2nd.
Well, it's not a lecture. Well, it's a demonstration.
Sorry, demonstration.
Yeah, demonstration.
Is,
well, it's a themed demonstration.
Yeah, yes. Yeah. And so in this particular year, it's going to be formal and fabulous, according to the notes. So tickets are now available online via the CHS website, and it looks like it's going to be a fabulous evening.
Yes. It's always been a sellout.
Yes, it has. It's one of our premier
all the years. It's been going for a long, long time.
So, yes, so if you're interested in going, book sooner rather than later.
Absolutely.
But finally, yes, make sure you join us again on Monday the 16th of March when we have our next round of book reviews.
Oh, my goodness, we have indeed.
I know. Yes. So Ray's going to be looking at, what, The Greenhouse book by Tom Brown?
Yes, it tells you how to use the greenhouse all year round.
Nice, we do like that.
Rather than just for summertime.
Just for the tomatoes in summer.
That's right.
And I'm going to be looking at plant parroting for busy people. If that sounds like a bit of you, it sounds like a bit of me.
Absolutely.
I'm going to be reviewing that. But that's a wrap for us.
I think
this fortnight. We'll talk to you again in a couple of weeks. But until then, don't forget your sunscreen and happy gardening.
Absolutely.
Thanks for joining us on Green Thumbs today.
Make sure to get involved with the Canterbury Horticulture Society in the lovely kiosk in the beautiful Christchurch Botanic Gardens.
The CHS offers many interesting workshops, courses and talks.
Check out what's coming up on Facebook and at chsgardens.co.nz.
And find past episodes on plains.org.nz and subscribe to the podcast on Spotify and Apple Podcasts.
Let's get our hands dirty.